ropes that tie the living entity. Since how long? Since time immemorial. We don't know how many births, how many cycles of creation we have seen. I was thinking of that over lunch. I was thinking, my God, it's quite depressing being here for so much time. But in the Bhagavatam we read always that it's, you know, it's all the illusory energy of the Lord. And our concept of time here is also a bewildered, it also bewilders us. So we feel like, well, gosh, it's so long time. It's such a long time, it's such a long time. But the Bhagavatam also says that the day we wake up to reality, we will realize that this time doesn't even have any substance. And we immediately rejoin reality, and it says it's just like, it appears like for a flash of lightning, we were a bit inattentive, and we are back on track. So it's not going to feel like this when we rejoin Krishna, that I've been away for such a long time. It's not going to feel like this. Yeah. It's due to illusion that we are perceiving. And from the physical point of view, time seems to be very, very long. But when we come in touch with eternity, it has no more value. This time has no more value. And it's not more than the flash of a lightning. It's all the illusory potency. Anything more? Krishna is ability in all the living entities. Anything powerful, any special characteristic, qualities, anything. It's all coming from Him. Yes? Yes, Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. How Krishna is the origin of this material nature, but at the same time he's not directly in touch with the material nature. Yes. Strength is meant to protect. This is Krishna's strength. Krishna protects. He's the ultimate protector. Yes, very good. And if when strength is used to oppress, then it becomes binding. You get reactions. Yes? He is the intelligence of the intelligent. And especially the intelligence that reveals him, that reveals the truth. That makes us understand this point, that he is inconceivable. Yes? Yes? Okay, we have seen the nature of the material nature, very mysterious material nature. Yes? The three modes of nature? Ah, yes. He is the master of the three modes, and they never affect him. They cannot bind him. But they entangle the living entity. So this is a great point of difference, which actually defeats this Mayavad philosophy. Now, how can we become entangled? And the answer is that because we are not the Brahman, we are not the complete Brahman, we are not the Lord, we are not everything, we are particles of the Brahman. So we come under. And how do we come under the binding of these three modes? Because we heard that the Jiva Bhuta is superior energy. And the Prakriti, the Apara Prakriti is inferior energy. So how can the superior energy be controlled by an inferior energy?
Because we have free will and we have
We have free will, and we decided to use it
wrongly.
Fully. Yes, somehow. Yeah, because he desires to control. But the controller is not him, it's the Supreme Lord. Yes. And we saw also that the jiva is a tiny particle, whereas the material energy is gigantic. It's the totality. The jiva may be able to control a little thingy, you know, he may be able to control a little piece of the material energy, and he thinks, I am controlling material energy. But material energy is not this. Material energy is all over, everywhere. We are within that material energy. And that totality of the material energy, that controls us. We may be able to, in an illusion, control a little piece of it. But no, we are under its control. Yes? She is submissive to the will of the Lord, and therefore she's all powerful. Yeah, she's actually a devotee. She's a devotee of the Lord. Behind this great manifestation, there is the personified form of the material energy, who is said to be a maid servant of Rama. Rama is the internal potency of Mahavishnu. And that internal potency has a maidservant. And that maidservant, she is Durga, Mahadurga, the great, powerful material energy of the Lord. And he consorts with her to create the material world. But she is always working for him. And whatever she does, in fact, in the Bhagavatam, it is interestingly said that this material energy in the universal form, the Durga, the material energy, stands in the back of the Lord. She is in the back of the Lord. And why she is in the back of the Lord? Because she's shy. She's a shy, meaning a little ashamed of the kind of job that she has. And, but she does it on behalf of Krishna. But what she does, she entangles the living entities and punishes them and toasts them. And you know, she's doing that work. And it's not a nice work. It's a very austere work. And it's not nice because she knows that Krishna loves the jivas. Krishna loves all the living entities. It's his expansion. It's his sons, Prabhupada says. He has vatsalya for the living entities in the material world. So the last thing that a father wants is that somebody beats his child. But that's what Durga Devi is doing as the material nature. She beats us left and right and gives us all kinds of sufferings. But why she does that? It's because we are not obedient to the father. So it's her duty. And by doing that, the hope is that we are going to wake up and we are going to get back to our original consciousness and desire to get out of this world of suffering. And as soon as we desire to get out of this world of suffering, Krishna will make the arrangement. So she is the shy servant of Krishna. Time, the perception of time is relative. Even the scientists have found out that time is relative. Time and space are related, and time is relative. So it depends. I can't say for a devotee, but it depending on our moods, time passes very slow or time passes very fast. So when you are happy, usually time passes very fast. It's already finished. Oh. And when you are suffering, then it's very long. You know, when you have a broken leg, 3 months is like 10 years. You know? But when you eat pizza, then finish. 5 minutes, like 3 minutes, 1 minute, it's all gone. It's already gone. The ice cream melts in the mouth. Finished. So time passes very fast. Yes. And we know for the pure devotees, it's the opposite. Time doesn't pass fast. No, yuga yitam nimeshena chakshusha pravishayitam. For the pure devotee, one moment in separation of the Lord is as long as what?
12 years.
12 years or more. Yeah. It's actually, you know, so it's not like this that for the devotees it passes shorter. Well, it's like this for everybody. As long as, and the life seems to be passing, the thing is that as age progresses, life seems to be passing faster and faster and faster and faster. It's not just heard, it's a fact. It's because suppose you are like 1 year old, okay? You are 1 year old. And the minutes are passing, the weeks are passing. And if you are 1 year old, your frame of reference, your knowledge of time is 1 year. Right? So, 1 month is 1/12 of your time. So 1 month is very long. I remember, and everybody can remember, when I was young, the summers, they were really long. They were very long summers. We were on holiday for 3 months from the school, and it was like forever. But now 3 months is not that long. Because, you know, as I said, the newborn, 1 year old, for him 1 month is 1/12 of his existence. But if somebody is 100 years old, then 1 month is how much? Oh, mathematicians. 1/1200. Good. So, you see, so because time, the perception of time is relative, then, and all people, they will tell you that, many of them, time passes like this. Oh, it's again the new year. I thought it was yesterday. And, you know, the years pass like this, and that's how, when you grow older, you understand that time passes very fast and there is no time left. Almost, it's just, and you know it's going to pass faster and faster and faster and faster. But still, the moods affect it. In happiness, you always feel that you want it to last longer. You want it to last, you want to keep the time. And when there is distress, you want it to pass fast, but it doesn't. And when there is separation from the Lord, that's for those who are more advanced in Krishna consciousness, then it seems eternity. When? Oh, when? This is the lamentation of the pure devotees. For them, time seems to be eternal, no end. So, I will read something here which is very, very nice, very beautiful, to make us fix in our mind clearly where this taste comes from, where this fragrance comes from, where this beautiful sound comes from. Because Prabhupada has been explaining, Krishna said, I am the fragrance in the earth, in the flower. I am the taste in the water. I am this, I am that. I am the sound in ether. So how is Krishna all this? Well, and we said the explanation was Akila Rasamrita Murti, that Krishna is the embodiment of all these things, of all the rasas. So this is a book by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, which is very worth reading. It explains how the devotee, as he advances in Krishna consciousness, if he comes to the point of asakti, and then one day is overwhelmed by the mercy of Krishna in the form of bhava, then gradually, by his devotion, by his feelings of separation, he actually attracts Krishna. He attracts Krishna to manifest himself, and he actually has a vision of Krishna that the devotees call a spurti, just a small, he has a vision of Krishna, and he becomes mad after having that vision of Krishna because of the experience that he goes through. So I will read about this experience of how the devotee perceives Krishna at this stage when he actually enters the field of bhava and prema bhakti. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur here compares prema with a magnet. The love that the devotee has in the heart is like a magnet, and it attracts Krishna, who is compared to a black piece of iron, and he is attracted to the love of the devotee. So he manifests. So he says, then one day, in this state of separation that the devotee is in, the magnet of his prema attracts black iron like Krishna, making him appear before the eyes of the devotee. And this is what happens. The Lord first reveals his form. Nama, Rupa, Guna, Lila, Dhamma. This is the stages of revelation. So he says, the Lord first reveals his form, but he doesn't say form, he says his beauty. In other words, the spiritual senses of the devotee first awaken through the eyes, and he sees, he gets the transcendental vision which we have been talking about. He sees the beautiful form of Shyam Sundar. This is called Saundarya, the beauty of Krishna. The Lord reveals his beauty to the eyes of the utterly astonished devotee. Why is he astonished? It's so beautiful. The Lord is so beautiful. And it's a form which he has never seen anything so beautiful and so sweet. This is the characteristic of Krishna, because we think he's the greatest, he's the most powerful, he's everywhere. So we get a kind of construct, like a sort of thing of Krishna. He must be like this, must be like that. But the heart of Krishna is his sweetness. So he's extremely sweet. And he says the sweetness of his beauty makes all the other senses, the beauty is seen by the eyes. But this beauty is so intense and sweet, and it's so enjoyable to see, that he says all the senses in the body of the devotee want to become eyes. They want to become eyes to see the Lord. And then he enters symptoms of ecstasy. He starts crying, shivering, he is stunned. And because of all these symptoms, what happens? He loses consciousness. So he loses consciousness, he swoons, he faints. So then the next thing is that the Lord revives him. In order to revive him, the Lord comes a little closer. And as he becomes closer, he awakens the transcendental sense of smell of the devotee. And the devotee, who is in a state of fainting, suddenly he awakens and he smells. Oh, what is this? Oh, such a wonderful fragrance. Such a wonderful fragrance. This is called Saurabhya. And he realizes as he opens his eyes that it comes from Krishna. So he sees the form and he smells the fragrance. And Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says the same, that he says all his senses want to become nose, to actually perceive fully this beauty of the fragrance of Krishna. And naturally the same thing happens. He feels feelings of ecstasy which his material body is not able to actually sustain. So he faints. And as he faints, then the Lord comes a little closer and he speaks. He starts speaking. And he says, "Oh, my devotee, I am fully under your control. Do not be disturbed." So he speaks. And the devotee's ears awake. And he hears this sound, the origin of all sound, which is the tremendously sweet and deep and loving and meaningful voice of Krishna. His pleasing, very pleasing voice is revealed to the ear of his devotee. And all the senses of the devotees want to become ears in order to hear that fantastic, incredible sound. And the most incredible about that sound is that you heard it before and you recognize it. And naturally what happens? He faints. So then the Lord comes even closer and he touches his devotee. And then he has this incredible perception of the original sense of touch and the original nature of the softness of Krishna's body. It is said that Krishna's body is like a newborn baby. If you have ever touched a newborn baby, it's very different. There is, our skin has many bumps on it. It's a different kind of thing. You know, you have rough hands. And you cannot compare. Even a young person, it cannot be compared with a baby. Baby skin is so soft. And it is said that when Krishna walked in the forest, even if one leaf would fall on his skin, it would leave a little reddish mark because it's so soft. So it says here that the Lord comes next to his devotee, and according to the rasa, according to the relationship that the devotee is aspiring for, then either, it says, if the devotee is in dasya, then the Lord will put his foot on his head and he will feel the softness of his foot on his head. And if the devotee is in sakya, then the Lord will hold his hand little strongly. It's a friend. Or he will pat him on the shoulder and he will feel that incredible touch of the Lord. And if the devotee is in vatsalya prem, then it says that Krishna will come with the softest of all hands and he will wipe away his tears of separation. And of course the devotee will awaken to this incredible perception of touch and he will be in total ecstasy, he will not be able to express anything and he will just faint. You're laughing. It's ecstasy. It's ecstasy. So he will faint. And, another thing he says is that if the devotee is in Madhurya Ras, then the Krishna will put his long arms around the body of the devotee and embrace the devotee. So in that way there is, as you can see, a gradual discovery of the origin. Where does that taste come from? Where does that smell come from? The smell is originally the fragrance of Krishna's body. And the sense of touch comes from Krishna's body. Everything, the beauty, the form, every quality that we see in the world, everything we see, it's originally in Krishna. And Krishna is described as the form of all pleasure. So there are more descriptions, which you are welcome to buy the book and read it, because it's very beautiful. This is the chapter on bhava. Eight shower of nectar of the Madhurya Kadambini. It's a must. We'll be studying that during Kartik for those who are here. We'll be teaching this book. So this way we understand that it's not just Krishna is saying like this. No, it's a fact. He is full of taste, sound, smell, everything. His body is made up of rasa. All right, so we were in the verse number 14. This is an important verse in which Krishna is telling us the nature of the material nature and the how we can become free from this. So has anyone understood here how we can become free from this covering of the material nature? We surrender unto Krishna. Easy, isn't it? Sounds easy. It sounds easy. So we surrender unto Krishna. That's the way. Why we have to surrender? Because we were told our hands and feet are bound. So we cannot deliver ourselves. We must be delivered by another who is free. Yes. So who is that? Guru. But originally that is Mukunda. It is Krishna. Why? It's Krishna and only Krishna. This is what this verse says. Eva. Devi yesha gunavai. Then it says, Mam Eva. Ye prapadyante eva. This word eva here means it's me, it's only me. It's only me. It's not Shiva, it's not Brahma, it's not the devatas, it's not any human being, it's not anybody. I only can deliver the jiva. Why? Because? Yeah, because he's the controller of Maya. No one else can untie these ropes. No one else can do that. And this entanglement is very intricate. One thing is that the nature we heard is very powerful. And the other thing is that we've been here for a long time. So in the beginning there were three ropes, and then there were nine, and then there were 87, and then you can continue with the computer. There were more and more and more and more and more. And we are so intricately entangled in karma since so much time in this world that we cannot open the nuts. It's not possible. No one can free us except for Krishna. And how does he free us? It's very easy. He just, what does he do? He just orders. It's not something like Krishna comes and undo this nut and then that nut, this nut, that nut. It's not like this. He just orders the material nature. Leave this one alone. Don't touch this one. Because behind this world, which appears very impersonal to us, there are personalities. And he just has to tell Durga Devi that no more, he's mine. And then immediately the devotee is released. So Now, is that enough? We just have to wait for Krishna's mercy? We have to do something? Prabhupada says sadhana helps. It helps.
Anything else?
He says devotional service or Krishna consciousness can help one gain such release. Yes. So it will help. And sadhana means our own effort. We should try from our side. But as we know, bhakti is not a sadhana like the other types of sadhana we studied before. It entails learning how to depend on Krishna. This is our sadhana, to learn how to depend on His name, how to depend on His worship, how to depend on His devotees, how to depend on Him. This is our sadhana. So we should learn from our side. But then there is mercy. Why does Krishna order the release of the living entity? Just because we are telling Him, please. Because of His affection. Isn't it nice? Because we are eternally related to Him. We forgot, but He did not. We always give the example of the children. You know, the children grow and they have no problem leaving home. In most cases. They have no problem. They just decamp. They just leave home. I don't know if I gave you this analogy, but it is even said that the child is like an arrow. And the parents are like a bow. And their role is to send the arrow somewhere to reach a target. Send them. Of course, they should send them to Krishna, but many times they send them somewhere else. But the point is that the arrow is not meant by nature to stay on the bow. It is like this. The parents produce children. They give their life to their children. They give their affection. They give everything. But the nature of the child is not to stay with the parent. It is like an arrow on the bow. And it is just waiting to be released and go and make his own life. And it is said that for the children, the parents are in the back. Right? Descends generation after generation. You were born and you are always in the front. The parents are in the back. They are my past. Parents are our past. We came from them. They are in the back. This is also why Krishna says, they don't know me because I am in the back. I came before them. And they are always looking in the front. And there in the back. So with the parents it's like this. The children are always in the front. They leave. And they don't care. They don't care. Sometimes they look back. You know, they send a letter. They give a little phone call. But they are not bothered. They have their own life. Their own children are their concern. Their own future. Their own life. This is their concern. Not their parents. That's why in the religious books, there is a duty. You must take care of your parents, because if it's not written there, bye-bye. The empire just leaves. So, but the father and the mother, do they forget their child? They cannot, because the child is in front of them. It's not in the back. It's in the front. And they are all attention. And they have given so much love and so on. So this is a mundane example. But the fact is that we forgot Krishna, looking forward to build a life in this world. But He did not forget us. And not forget us means that His relationship of love for us, it's never broken. He loves us. He loved us when we were with Him. And He loves us now, all the time. And because of that love, He is inclined. As soon as we make a little sign, immediately He is inclined to tell Maya, don't touch him. He's coming back. So Prabhupada gives two reasons. One reason is his paternal affection. Aham bija pradapita. I'm the seed-giving father. So because of his affection, which is unceasing, unending, uninterrupted, he feels, he wants to protect us and he wants to get us back. And Srila Prabhupada also says, because of causeless mercy. Causeless mercy. There doesn't have to be any cause. Krishna is naturally merciful. It's his nature. He's always like that. So his mercy keeps falling here, there, because that's his nature. So there are a few things here that we can read. The conditioned soul is therefore called Nityabaddha, or eternally conditioned. First I should read something else. Both the material and spiritual natures, being emanations from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are eternal. The living entities belong to the eternal superior nature of the Lord, but due to contamination by the inferior nature, matter, their illusion is also eternal. The conditioned soul is therefore called Nityabaddha, or eternally conditioned. No one can trace out the history of his becoming conditioned at a certain date in material history. Consequently, his release from the clutches of material nature is very difficult, even though that material nature is an inferior energy, because material energy is ultimately conducted by the Supreme Will, which the living entity cannot overcome. Inferior material nature is defined herein as divine nature, due to its divine connection and movement by the divine will. So there is this definition. The material nature is eternal, and the jiva is eternal. And the relationship with the two, that is also an eternal relationship, in the sense that by nature, because he is minute in size, and because he has free will, the living entity is eternally, subject. Is eternally, potentially subject to come under the material nature. That's the nature of the jiva. And it can always happen. So it says that he's eternally conditioned. But as we know, is that we can go back to Godhead. When we go back to Godhead, we become mukta. We are no more conditioned. And it is also said that once we go back there, we will not return. Krishna has made that promise. We will not return. But otherwise, the nature of the living entity, unless there is that special protection by Krishna. When Krishna gives special protection, then the living entity doesn't return. Otherwise, our eternal nature is to be very minute and to have free will. And because of that, and the material, because of that, and the fact also that we are always subordinate, due to this minute nature, we are subordinate either to Krishna and the internal potency, or we are subordinate to material nature. And this is our nature, eternally. And therefore the danger is always there, that the living entities can come to this world. And Prabhupada says, we cannot trace out the history of the living entities becoming conditioned. We cannot trace out the history. Usually it says, anadi kala se, since time immemorial. And anadi actually means without beginning. That there is no beginning to this conditioning. However, we logically we would understand that time as a beginning and an end, and somehow there must have been a time when we actually came here. But it's not possible to trace, in the sense that the karma is so complicated, and even though we feel, as Purvanimai was saying, that time passes slowly or quickly, but the fact is, if we study the Bhagavatam, we see that our births are just taking place one after the next, just the clapping of hands. Mosquito, human, animal, plant, mosquito, human, animal, plant, mosquito, animal, human, plant. It's just changing so fast, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam. When you compare the length or the duration of the universe and the duration of the life of a living entity, it is so insignificant. From our point of view, it seems very big. But from the point of view of the universal time, it is just like this. It's just passing like this. Just when we see the life of the ephemere, there's this little fly, you know, that just takes birth and dies immediately. And in very short time it takes birth, it grows, it becomes to maturity, it produces offspring and dies. In such a short time. And this is the duration of our life, which means that we are having millions and millions and millions and millions of births. One after the next. So who can trace the history? So many millions of births. So who can trace the history? And this also means, also explained in the sense that actually if we want to know the cause, the reason why we are here, we cannot find this cause in this world. That is another explanation of why there is no trace in this world. Why? Because the reason why we came here occurred before we arrived here. Before we came here, something happened. Something happened in the spiritual world. Something happened. So, but it is not under the jurisdiction of material time, because it is a factor of the spiritual time. It's not under the factor of time that we are under here. And therefore the cause cannot be traced. We cannot trace the cause. Prabhupada says, this is also interesting. Another meaning of guna is rope. A man bound by the hands and feet cannot free himself. He must be held by a person who is unbound. Because the bound cannot help the bound, the rescuer must be liberated. Therefore, only Lord Krishna or his bona fide representative, the spiritual master, can release the conditioned soul. Without such superior help, one cannot be freed from the bondage of material existence. So we must understand the giver of liberation is Mukunda. And he works through his devotees. His devotees, his pure devotees, are helping him in this task of liberating the conditioned souls. But originally, it's him who is deliverer. The living entity, the spiritual master, requests him to please deliver his foolish disciple. He requests. And of course we understand that the closer the spiritual master or the living entity is with Krishna in love, the more Krishna is inclined to listen to that person. But when it comes to the Guru Parampara, it is understood that the spiritual masters in the line of disciplic succession, they fulfill the desires of the acharyas. They fulfill the desires of the present acharyas. So in that way, this is our chance to be liberated. We pray to the spiritual master who prays to his own spiritual master, and so on. And we become liberated by the mercy of the Guru Parampara. So in the next verses, Krishna is going to explain us who is qualified to surrender unto him and who is not. Because after hearing all this, that we should just surrender to Krishna and everything will be over, we will be freed. So why don't people not just surrender to Krishna? After all, everybody wants atyanta sukham. Yes, everyone wants this eternal happiness. Always be happy. Everyone wants to always be happy. Everyone wants to be free. That people are running after happiness, success, freedom, all over the world, and this is the way to get it. So why don't they just surrender? Why don't they just agree? So Krishna is going to explain this. In verse 15, he says that, in verse 15 he tells us about those who are not qualified, those who do not surrender unto him. And what is the basic reason? What's the basic reason?
Envy.
It's envy, jealousy. Ego, delusion,
demonic nature.
They are stupid, basically. Stupid. Their knowledge is stolen. Actually, the bottom of the bottom of the bottom is that they don't believe in Krishna. They don't have faith in him. They don't have faith in his words. They don't have faith in him. They don't have faith that he's all good. They don't have faith that to work under him is the best situation in the world and he's going to give us the greatest happiness and the greatest freedom. They absolutely don't believe the words of the Shastra. So here he says, Namam duskritino mudha prapadyante naradhamaha mayaya pahrita jnana asuram bhavam ashritaha. Those miscreants, that's a funny word, isn't it? Those miscreants, Prabhupada says later on, that those who are selfish, irregular, without spiritual goals. And then he gives them four different categories Krishna gives, who are grossly foolish. What is this in Sanskrit? Mudha. Not mudha. Mudha. This is mudha. Opposite of buddha. There is buddha and mudha. Okay, so these ones are grossly foolish. Next one, who are lowest amongst mankind, Naradhama, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, Mayaya Aparita Jnana, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, Asuram Bhavam Ashritaha. They do not surrender unto me, Krishna says. So the question arises, how is it that educated philosophers, scientists, businessmen, administrators, and all the leaders of ordinary men do not surrender to the lotus feet of Krishna? And Prabhupada says, actually they are not philosophers, they are not scientists, they are not educators, they are not real administrators, they simply pose as such, but actually they are just hypocrites. So now, in this purport, Srila Prabhupada very nicely unleashes all his feelings for the non-devotees and very generously blasts them. Masterpiece it is, this purport. It's very long purport and it's a masterpiece. So these fools, faithless, who pretend to be intelligent, Prabhupada says. They do not surrender. Rather, they try to overcome the material energy by different means, either technological or philosophical. So they are called duskritina. Usually, this kriti means some deeds. And it means some great deeds. So sometimes they do something great, but it is not very great, because there are two kinds of kriti. One is sukriti and one is duskriti. And here we are in the duskriti department. Bad. It's bad. It may be big, like a big 747 or something. Or it can be big, like a big skyscraper. It can be huge, like a huge dam and everything. But somehow or other, their intelligence and their efforts are simply misdirected. So, they are not understanding. Prabhupada says, any gigantic plan, good or bad, must take intelligence to execute. But because the atheist brain is improperly utilized in opposing the plan of the Supreme Lord, the atheistic plan maker is called Dushkriti, which indicates that his intelligence and efforts are misdirected. So they do not understand. They do not understand that this material energy, Prabhupada says, works fully under the direction of the Supreme Lord. It has no independent authority. It works as the shadow moves in accordance with the movements of the object. You understand this analogy of the shadow? It's very interesting. That whenever there is a shadow, so the person who is the real person is moving, and the shadow is imitating each and every movement. So this means that the shadow is completely controlled by the actual figure, and this is the material nature. It is absolutely not independent from Krishna. It doesn't have any independent nature at all. It doesn't have. Just as the shadow exists as long as the original figure exists. If there is no original figure, there is no shadow. But what can exist is a figure without shadow. That can exist. The figure can exist without the shadow. By physical laws, for example, when there is sun, then there will be a figure, walking figure, and there will be a shadow. And this shadow fully depends on the existence of the figure. If there is only the sun and no figure, then there is no shadow. But sometimes there is no sun. So what happens? The figure is there, but the shadow is not there. So you can understand from this that the figure is real and the shadow, it is relative. That's what is called relative truth. It exists only in certain conditions, and it is a reflection of something else, but on its own it doesn't exist. You will never have the sun and the shadow. You have to have the real figure there. If it's not there, there is no shadow. So this material energy is considered like this. It looks so real to us, but it's actually a shadow of the reality. But the impious people, the faithless, they do not consider things like this. They think that this material nature exists on its own, and we are the controllers, we are the purushas, we are the controllers of this material nature, and we can control it. So let us see who are these people here, because by chance, if we are one of them, we'd rather be in the next list. Yes? I don't know exactly, but the point is that you must understand that the shadow doesn't exist on its own. The shadow is always related to another figure, which is considered like this is the real figure, right? And the sun, it refers to different conditions. There are certain conditions under which the material, the shadow is manifest or is not manifest. In that sense, you could say, I mean, what is the reality actually of creation, as we study, is that you could say the sun is like the total, it can be either it's the will of Krishna, or in general, it's the total desire of the conditioned souls. They are the one who produce that manifestation of the shadow. When the living entities want to enjoy separately from Krishna, and the total, they, one living entity, we cannot create a universe. We don't have that power. Only Krishna can. So the totality of the desire of all the living entities who want to enjoy separately from Krishna, because of their desire, Krishna fulfills that desire by creating the material world. Then the shadow occurs. And the living entities are projected in that shadow. And they try to enjoy something which is not the reality. Now, who are the mudhas? Who are they? Yes? You know, Prabhuji. You are not mudha. What is the definition? I don't see. By seeing your face, you don't look like the description which is given here. It says they work like an ass. They are compared to asses and pigs. It's quite a nice description. I always thought that Prabhupada was really hard and creative sometimes, but actually this is all from the Shastra. That the qualities of the animals are seen in the human beings and they are compared to that. The camels, the ass, the dog, the cats. So, who are the mudas? Who understood who are the mudas? Okay, those who work hard for no use?
They keep working and keep on and think that's going to give them something, everlasting.
Yeah?
Those who keep working only for the flickering happiness.
For the flickering happiness, yes.
After long working like the ass, these are very little grass.
Yes, so these are the fruitive workers. The fruitive workers, those who work like asses for material enjoyment. They're always running after the material enjoyment. But as we know, it's like the man who is having a donkey, and in order to get the donkey to go further, he attaches a long stick in the back of the donkey, and in the front he hangs a carrot. So the donkey thinks, oh, carrot. So he starts walking towards the carrot, not understanding that the carrot is tied to his back. And as he progresses, the carrot also goes further. So this is the mudha, the ass. Another example is that he works to get a little grass, not understanding that grass is growing everywhere. You don't have to carry all these big loads just to get a little grass. When, if you were not attached with the rope, you could eat grass anywhere. So, the mudha, the unintelligent. First of all, mudha means stupid. So, that's why the ass is given, because Prabhupada says in Ishopanishad, the ass is the symbol of stupidity. So he's stupid, unintelligent, because he works so hard to achieve sense gratification. He's grossly foolish, low class, works day and night. Actually, these are the karmis. It's the karmis. Those who are just after sense gratification. But lower than them is the Naradama. What are the Naradama? Lowest of mankind. In what way are they lowest of mankind? They do not use the opportunities that they have been given. Yes. They are vikarmis, yes, they don't even follow any rules at all. They are the unregulated bunch. At least the karmis, they so much want to enjoy that they end up following some kind of morality, some kind of rules. Ultimately, they will follow the karmakanda, but they are fools because they want to enjoy the shadow. But the naradamas, they are not even able to follow the rules and regulations of the scriptures. They neglect the duties of the human form of life completely. Prabhupada said here, it seems to say there are kind of two categories. One is the lower forms of human life, like the primitives in the jungle. So these are Naradhama, the lowest of mankind, because they have no brain at all. And they are not capable of understanding anything. They are very close to animal life. But there is another kind, those who are socially and politically developed, as we have today in the modern world, socially and politically developed, but no religious principles. They are not working for the elevation of themselves at all. And they are not following any moral etiquette or anything. So these people are called Naradama. They are technologically advanced, but they do not follow any Varnashram principles. They are not trying for spiritual life. Of course, Srila Prabhupada takes it to the extreme. They don't practice Krishna consciousness. Lowest of mankind. Yes. And Prabhupada, I don't know if it's in this purport, yeah, he says, 99% of the population is Naradhama. 99.9, sorry. Because in this age there is no knowledge of Varnashrama, there is no knowledge of the sanskaras, the purificatory processes to upgrade the consciousness of mankind. Nobody knows about that. Therefore, all Naradama. So from this we understand that these categories, overlap a little bit. But in general, the first ones are just stupid karmis. They are even ready to follow any rules, but their goal is enjoyment. And the Naradamas, they don't know about the rules. They are not concerned. And then there is the Mayaya Parita Jnana, those persons whose erudite knowledge has been nullified by the influence of the illusory material energy. They are mostly very learned fellows. So we heard there are two kinds of conditionings. One is the karmi conditioning and the other one is the jnani conditioning. Some people are inclined to work like asses and enjoy on the gross platform, and others are inclined to speculate and enjoy in the subtle platform. But they are also completely bewildered. So these are the Mayaya Prita Jnana. They are intelligent, but still under illusion. And most of them, they are impersonalists. And because they are not surrendered to Krishna, they disobey the rules and they take birth again and again. So this includes, as we said, all the intelligent people who are under illusion and the impersonalists. Yes, all these people, those so-called philosophers, Prabhupada gives a whole list here. The great philosophers, including those who comments on the Bhagavad Gita outside the Guru Parampara, the poets, all these people writing novels and poetries in glorification of material nature. Literati, that means those who write, you know, the academicians and their intelligence, they talk about this and that. And the scientists, also big brains who figure out the workings. The scientists are the ones who try to uncover the laws of nature and use the laws of nature. Very intelligent, they are very intelligent. But their intelligence, even though they are very intelligent, this is by human calculation. Otherwise, their intelligence is anu. Anu. Very small. It's anu buddhi. Little. So it looks good in front of those who are ignorant, but otherwise. And now there is the next one. Asuram bhavam ashritaha, those of demonic principles. And basically these are the atheists, those who openly say that there is no God, those who are openly envious. You remember we talked of Nietzsche, who said, God is dead. This is this kind of people, God is dead. And God said, Nietzsche is dead now. Nietzsche, it was his name. Nietzsche, you know, the German philosopher. I told you that story. Well, you were all sick. I told you that story. I told you that story. You just... Maybe in Mauritius? I told the story in Mauritius. No, there was this. There was a philosopher who was German. To be German already, you have to have a very special kind of past. There was a German philosopher. He became one of the greatest philosophers of his time, and he wrote a very famous book with the conclusion of which was, it was a search into God. And his conclusion was that God is dead. That was the conclusion. God is dead, right? Because so long ago nobody ever saw him. Obviously he died. You know, even otherwise he would be here. So, continuing on this line of logic, his followers, because he published his books and they were sold everywhere, so his followers started writing slogans. God is dead. That was their slogan. And in the West, if you go to the West, you will see that one of the most, unconstructive pastimes of the young people nowadays, and even the old ones who were young some years ago, what they do is they write on the walls. As soon as there is a new wall, within a day or two, it's full of graffitis. They write all kinds of things that nobody can read. But at that time, they used to write things that people can read. So they were writing everywhere, God is dead. And they were spreading this materialistic philosophy. This is at the time when the materialism took over Europe and all the Western world. Because before that, they believed in God. But the wave of materialism was growing. And so they wrote that thing, God is dead, and then underneath, like we do when we quote Prabhupada or somebody, they would quote him in brackets, Nietzsche, that was his name, Nietzsche said, you know, this is a saying by Nietzsche, signed Nietzsche. And then, of course, after, I don't know, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, what happened? Guess what happened? Nietzsche died because he was a human being, right? So his body collapsed. And so Nietzsche died. So then the anti-party, the Christians and all the believers in God and all those who thought, anyway, what else? But they immediately started going everywhere and they found all the walls where nothing was written or even where these things were written, and they wrote in big letters, Nietzsche died, signed God. Became very famous in Europe. So this is the grossly foolish here. And Prabhupada says, grossly foolish, professed atheist. So number 16, something a little better. Who surrenders? Four kind of worshippers of God. Chaturvidha bhajante mam jana sukriti darjana arto jinya surarthati jnani cha bharatar shabha. O best amongst the Bharatas, four kinds of pious men begin to render devotional service unto me. The distressed, who is that in Sanskrit? The artha. The desire of wealth, artharthi. The inquisitive, chikyasu. And he who is searching for knowledge of the absolute, the jnani. So, four kinds of people come to Krishna. These ones are able, they are qualified to actually worship him. And Prabhupada said, all these four kinds, they are different. They all have their characteristics, but they are all Mahatmas. They are all great souls, because they come to Krishna. The others, they don't go at all. They stay away. So they are all Mahatmas. Who are they, actually? Who are they? Srila Prabhupada said, these are adherents of the regulative principles of the scriptures, and they are called Sukritina. So they also have done lots of deeds, but they have done rather good deeds. So they are, but they are not sinners. They are different kinds of people, the Sukritinas. So usually these are people who follow Varnashram. These are people who belong to this progressive path. They are following the Vedas. They are surrendered to some extent. And they hear the Shastras. And they follow some kind of process of Yajna. They follow the Vedic literatures. And of course, they have come to hear about Krishna. And after having heard about Krishna, they didn't feel any envy. They didn't feel anything. Rather, they had some faith in him. They understood. So, they are people who have a little bhakti. Two things they have some good in them, and they have a little bhakti, which they have acquired in different ways. It can be that they have acquired bhakti because within the rules of Varnashram, within the Karma Kanda, within the Karma Yoga, there are certain duties which are directly related to the Supreme Lord and which are actually some kind of devotional activities. And by doing these activities, bhakti begins growing in the heart of the person. And they might have done some unknown devotional service. You will study that in the Nectar of Devotion. Some unknown devotional service by the mercy of some pure devotee who visited their home. They gave a big donation to a big Mahatma who happened to be a great devotee of the Lord. Or they just carried his suitcase as he got down the train. Something. So they did something. And that way they built some kind of devotional sukriti which made them eligible, you know, to at least approach devotional service. They are called by Srila Prabhupada impure devotees. Ever heard that before? Impure devotees. Impure. Why are they called impure devotees?
They're not following the path of pure devotional
Yeah, because they are not following the path of pure devotion. It's not just because they have material desires, because sometimes the devotees also have material desires. So it's not just that they have material desires. Yes, they have material desires. But the reason why they are impure devotees is because they haven't yet made Krishna as their sole shelter, and especially they are not practicing bhakti, pure bhakti. They are not on that path. They are walking on another path, but somehow or other they become attracted to Krishna. So, of course, their material desires and their material purpose in approaching Krishna, that's also a reason. So one is they are not permanently fixed. They are not permanently fixed on the path of devotion. Therefore, you know, this is not their main thing in life. So they are not pure devotees. And secondly, they are full of material desires. So let us see here, who are they? So artha. Artha means what? One who is in distress. What is the example for one who is in distress in Srimad Bhagavatam? Gajendra, the elephant. He was in distress. He was attacked by a big crocodile. And Prabhupada explains, this is the symbolism of us who is attacked by Maya. Maya is attacking us. And when she attacks, well, those who are stupid, they fight back. And those who are just a little intelligent, they immediately run to Krishna like a child runs to his mother. It's natural. They immediately turn to Krishna. So they are in trouble. They are in trouble with material life. They are in material distress. Like that's why in the hospitals they always have some place for praying, right? If you go in the hospital, they have a place to pray. Because the people at that time, that's the only thing they want to do is pray. Yes. So, next, who is the artarti? So they are in distress, therefore they go to Krishna to relieve the distress. That's their purpose. It's not to please him or something. Or they don't do that under the order of a spiritual master or anything. And they don't do that every day either. It's only the day they are in distress that they go to Krishna. The rest of the days they go to Durga, Saraswati, Shiva, Ganesh, everybody else. And mundane people, money, anything. And then there is the artarti. Who are these? Those who want something. They deserve something. Yeah. They are fruitive. They are fruitive workers. But it's their good luck that somehow, you know, they have come to Krishna to ask, gimme, gimme, gimme. They could have gone to the devatas, but by some special arrangement, they came to Krishna to ask for it. Or they couldn't get it. It's their last. This is the last chance. No other devata gave it to me. So I'll go to Krishna. Right. So again, these people, as soon as they get what they want, bye-bye. I'm going. I got it. My pockets are full. I don't need you anymore. Now I'm independent. And the next one is Jigyasu. The Jigyasu means one who is inquisitive. So you would say, well, that's nice, he's a good person, he's inquisitive. But Prabhupada explains, why is he inquisitive? Because he's completely frustrated with life. He has had reversals, or maybe he has tried to look for the truth and he couldn't find it anywhere. So somehow or other, he comes to Krishna to know. He wants to know about God. But he's in ignorance. He doesn't know about the soul. He doesn't know who he is. He doesn't know who God is. He's just somehow or other inquisitive. He would like to know. He doesn't know. And the characteristic of... So these three types are put in one category. Which is that they are sakam, sakam. They want something. They are all fruitive. Release from distress, some money, some land, some husband, some wife, some something. They want something, some wealth from Krishna. And the jigyasu, he wants some knowledge. He wants to know something. He wants answers to some questions. He's not always ready to hear the answer. That's a different thing. But he likes to ask. It's also a nature. Some people are just inquisitive. They like to ask questions. They never hear the answers. But they come to the Lord. And then once their desire is fulfilled, they go away. That's why Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport that they come sometimes, Prabhupada said, he repeats, those who are sometimes distressed, sometimes inquisitive, sometimes searching after knowledge of the Absolute. So they all come sometimes. They are not fully fixed here. Some of the acharyas, they say that in general these are grihasthas, but in this age can be anything. But in general, they are grihasthas who are involved with material life. And then there is the fourth one, the jnani. The jnani is one who is in knowledge, first of all, because already he is a jnani. So he understands himself not being the body, and he understands that there is a God. He comes to Krishna with knowledge. He is wise. And so he is considered nishkam. It is considered that he doesn't have a material purpose in coming. His coming to Krishna is based on his knowledge that I am not this body and my duty is to surrender to Krishna. So he comes like that. And generally some commentators say he's a sannyasi. So in the sense that he's somebody who is already detached from material life. He wants spiritual life and he wants to begin spiritual life and he wants to stay in spiritual life. The other three, they didn't come to stay. But this one is more inclined to actually come. So all these people come to Krishna. And after coming to Krishna, then only they come to hear about bhakti and ananya bhakti. Because to come to Krishna means you arrive in the association of devotees. So as they come to the association of devotees, then they get this transcendental knowledge. They get to hear that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. And he is the one who fulfills all desires. They come to know the position of the devatas, the position of the soul, the position of devotional service. And as they hear, they may decide, if they are lucky, and by the cultivation, by the mercy of the devotees, and by coming again and again and again, they will, by worshipping Krishna, their material desires and their illusion is going to be eradicated, and they will become bhaktas. But when they become bhaktas, they are not immediately completely pure devotees. They become what is called karma mishra bhaktas or jnana mishra bhaktas, meaning that they still have so many tendencies which are there. The tendency to enjoy is there, or the tendency to speculate is there, because the jnani, he comes from, you know, a path of knowledge, of cultivation of knowledge. So there might be, in case of the jnani, there might be a slight impersonalistic tendency which is there, which will have to be cleared by bhakti. So originally, they become karma mishra bhaktas or jnana mishra bhaktas, and they are like this until they fully understand pure devotional service and give up all other practices and endeavor to purify themselves. So in general, they are neophyte devotees. They come to devotional service And even though one of them is a big jnani, and he may be very good in philosophy, and he may be very high in knowledge, and he may have realized that he is not this body, so in one sense he is very advanced, but on the path of bhakti, he is a neophyte. How is that? Is not fixed. Yeah, because bhakti means establishing a personal relationship with Krishna and developing love for Krishna. It's different from knowledge. So he doesn't have that personal relationship with Krishna. So he's a neophyte. And all of them are going to be elevated in bhakti by the association of the pure devotees, who are going to cultivate the pure devotion in them. So, Krishna says that out of all of them, as I said, three are sakam and the jnani is nishkam. So Krishna immediately is attracted by the nishkam person. Chaturvidha bhajante mam jana sukritin arjuna arto jignyasur arthati jnani chabharatar shabha. Oh, best among the Paratas, four kinds. Oops, sorry. No more questions. 17. The best of the four who surrenders, the jnani, because he is more advanced than the other ones. Tesham jnani nitya yukta eka bhaktiya visishyate priyo hinyani no tyartam aham satcha mama priyaha. So this is, Krishna says, mama priyaha. Of these, the one who is in full knowledge and who is always engaged in pure devotional service is the best. For I am very dear to him and he is dear to me. So this is the jnani. All of them can become pure devotees by association. But the jnani is more advanced, naturally. He has already come from sakam to nishkam. He has already gone through some purification. So he is more advanced, he is more free from illusion, so he understands things quicker, and he is actually an immediate candidate for pure devotional service. The others, they're going to take time. They're going to take time to purify all their material desires and change their habits. And they will have to come to the point of knowledge, which they are not. They will take up devotional service on the bodily platform. They still haven't realized that I'm not this body, but they take to devotional service. Whereas the jnani, he already knows I'm not this body. And he takes to devotional service. So his progress will be very rapid. Very quickly, he will be able to take up pure devotional service without mixing it with anything. And especially, because he can differentiate between spirit and matter, his determination will be very strong. And he will quickly become fixed. He will come to the level of nishtha. Whereas the others, being dragged back and forth by their material desires, they are going to worship and then go back to their material desires and then come back and forth. They are going to be pulled and pushed inside, but not the jnani. For him, there will be nishtha. And we see that in ISKCON. Some people come and it takes them like 15 years to become fixed in chanting 16 rounds. They cannot. But they are devotees. They want. They're very nice. But because of the past, they are not eligible for nishtha. Whereas some people, you know, they just come and somebody tells them, you have to chant 16 rounds, follow four regulative principles. And they start on that very day. And they never desist. So what's the difference between the two? They have a different past. So here, Krishna says, so this person becomes very dear to Krishna. And Krishna becomes dear to him because he didn't come for any other reason. He actually came for Krishna. He came with understanding. So immediately he starts cultivating love for Krishna. Whereas the others have to clean up the house first. And then we'll see about loving Krishna. So they will do a very mechanical chanting. But so two reasons why he is the best, why he is the dearest. One is given Nitya Yukta. He is always engaged in approaching Krishna. We saw the others, they come, they get what they want, they go. And after some time, they again need something else, so they again come to Krishna. Or they get in trouble, they come to Krishna. They have a question, they come to Krishna, and then they go. Whereas the jnani, he has come to stay. And he becomes steady immediately due to the basis of knowledge. And then there is Eka Bhaktir. Eka Bhakti, meaning his devotion is fixed in me only, Krishna says. The others, they may have parallel lines of authority. They worship Krishna, but a little bit Maya also. A little bit the Devata, a little bit the this and that, you know. Whereas this one, Krishna is his only shelter because he has already understood the nature of the world. He is without material desires. So therefore he is very dear to Krishna. What were some other examples? Who came for because he wanted something material from Krishna? Dhruva Maharaj. That's a very common example. And who was inquisitive? The sages in Naimisharanya, they are given as that example. They were asking questions. Lots of questions. And who was the example of the jnani? The four Kumaras are Shukadev Goswami. Yes, Shukadev Goswami. Yes. Okay, then what does it say? Udara sarva evete jnani tvameva me matam ashtita sahi yuktatma mameva nuttamam gatim. So, but Krishna, merciful as he is, even though he says one is dear to me, but that doesn't mean that he doesn't like the other ones. He likes all of them. All these devotees are undoubtedly magnanimous souls. How are they called? Udara. Udara. That means magnanimous. It means mahatmas. They are mahatmas. They are all great, Krishna says. They are also great. They are exalted. Udara also means generous. Why are they generous? They came to Krishna and they gave him something. Patram, pushpam, phalam, toyam. This is very generous. They are very generous. They gave me something. So immediately Krishna becomes happy. I can't deny them, Krishna says. I know they are mixed, but I can't deny them. They are very magnanimous souls. They love me. And somebody says, I love them all, and they generally love me. I love them all. Generally, they also love me. But he who is situated in knowledge of me, I consider to be just like my own self. Being engaged in my transcendental service, he is sure to attain me, the highest and most perfect goal. So now we are talking here of somebody who becomes a devotee and who begins practicing sadhana, devotional service, in a fixed manner. And so therefore, Krishna immediately has a preference for him. So he's just like my own self. Why is that? Because there is some love there. There is some love which begins. Krishna thinks of that devotee, and the devotee thinks of Krishna. Prabhupada says, the devotees who want some benefit out of devotional service are accepted by the Lord because there is an exchange of affection. You know, dadati, pratigrinati, Krishna understands that as affection. But the devotee in full knowledge is considered to be very dear to the Lord because his only purpose is to serve the Supreme Lord with love and with love and devotion. Now Prabhupada quotes this thing from the Bhagavatam, the devotees are always in my heart and I am always in the heart of the devotees. So he is like their own, he's like his own self. But again, remember, we are still at the level that this is someone who has come to Krishna consciousness. He's not yet a pure devotee. He will become, or especially an advanced devotee. So he's not yet an advanced devotee, but he's in Krishna's good books because his intention is pure. He can understand anya bilashita shunyam jnana karma janavritam. He gives up everything, practices only bhakti, and he tries very hard to eliminate whatever little things are in his heart, and especially the impersonalistic tendencies. However, the pure devotee who is advanced, who is completely advanced in Krishna consciousness, Krishna doesn't say that he's like my own self. What does he say? He's better than me. So he has still some way to go, because the great devotees, Krishna considers them better than himself. So this verse actually should be an impetus, these verses, they should be an impetus for us to come up to this level of knowledge, to want to know Krishna, study his books, hear from him. We know that knowledge will come from hearing, knowledge will come from chanting. We should be very eager to develop knowledge of Krishna. We should be very eager to purify our desire, to pray for that pure desire that the jnani has, the one who is in knowledge, to simply serve Krishna without any material motivation. Because if we can just get that pure desire, then this is what will happen, that we will become dear to Krishna. And as soon as he casts his merciful glance upon us, then our advancement will be guaranteed. And another thing that we should aspire for, pray for, and try for is Nitya Yukta. He is constantly engaged in devotional service. And this we should try. We should pray to Krishna to please engage me in your service. Nothing mundane. Let me work for you. Let me serve you. Let me chant your name. Let me hear about you. Because it is that factor of being always engaged in Krishna's service, being always connected with him directly. This is what Krishna likes. He wants attention. Like a child wants attention. Krishna wants us with him. And the more we are in contact with him, the more we get purified and the more we develop our relationship with him. So we should take inspiration from this. Then we will read this one here. Bahunam janmanamante jnanavan mam prapadyate vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sudurlabha. After many birth and death, this is a nice way to put it, bahunam janmanam ante, after many birth and death, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. So knowing me to be the cause of all causes means that he sees everything in relation to Krishna. And I think Prabhupada explains this. One who can understand that Lord Sri Krishna's mercy is everything, that he is the cause of all causes, and that this material manifestation is not independent from him. One who realizes the material world to be a perverted reflection of spiritual variegatedness and realizes that in everything there is a relationship with the Supreme, Lord Krishna. So such universal vision of Vasudeva precipitates one's full surrender to the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna as the highest goal. So how long does it take to come? This is what Krishna is explaining. That how long does it take to actually become a devotee who aspires to purely serve Krishna? So this can be, we can say, how long does it take? The knowledge of the jnani is this, is that he knows Vasudeva Sarvam Iti, that Krishna is everything, and everything is connected to Krishna. There's nothing wrong anywhere, and all my life is controlled by Krishna, and therefore I surrender unto him. When that knowledge comes, that you can see, yes, I am part of a whole. So when that knowledge comes, then Prabhupada said, it precipitates the surrender. But this, Krishna says, it takes many birth. So this can be explained in different ways here. There are two ways to see it. One way is to see in relationship to these three other types of devotees, the Sakam devotees, the Arto, Artati, Jigyasu, is that it takes them many births to actually come to the point of becoming a jnani and to surrender to Krishna fully. So that's one understanding of this verse. After many births, the Sakam devotees come to knowledge. They become jnanis. And then they surrender fully. Or by in practicing, even if they practice devotional service, but it's not pure, they mix it with something else. So it takes them quite long time to actually come to realize Krishna and desire to only serve him. Or it may also mean that after many, many births, the devotee who is in knowledge, he comes to the point of pure devotion. He becomes a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because it takes time to come to this point of really accepting Krishna completely and being completely surrendered to him. Initially, we have to become free to the tendency to enjoy, and we have to also become free from the tendency to renounce this world. We have studied that. So those who come to Krishna fight with different tendencies, the tendency to renounce everything, the tendency to enjoy everything. So it takes time to come to this realization. But in general, as soon as we come to that realization, then progress is very fast. So Prabhupada explains, the living entity, while executing devotional service or transcendental rituals, after many, many births, may actually become situated in transcendental pure knowledge that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate goal of spiritual realization. In the beginning of spiritual realization, while one is trying to give up one's attachment to materialism, there is some leaning towards impersonalism. But when one is further advanced, he can understand that there are activities in the spiritual life and that these activities constitute devotional service. Realizing this, he becomes attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and surrenders unto Him. And once one has surrendered to Krishna, then if one follows properly, then it's not many, many births. It takes many births to come to the point of pure surrender. But once we come to that point, then we heard the other day, if we surrender to Srila Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya, then they preached very boldly, even though many people said, no, no, it will take much more than one life. But Srila Prabhupada preached this very boldly, that in one lifetime you can go back to Godhead. And he's empowered to do that because of the mercy of Lord Chaitanya in this age where life is very short and there is danger at every step. Okay, so we will stop here. Any questions regarding this section? You can keep your questions for tomorrow, otherwise, you can ask for tomorrow. So somebody today was saying, oh, how nice this chapter 7. It's a different energy from the previous chapters. Because we have changed now. We have entered the domain of bhakti. And it's going to be very, very wonderful as we keep going up, up. Very nice. Chapter 8, chapter 9, chapter 10. I used to not like very much chapter 10 and 11. But after studying them further, then I came to understand that, wow, this is practically the closest you come to Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, these chapters that actually talk of Him and His form and His qualities, and they are quite personal, actually. It's very nice. Srila Prabhupada ki.